6 weeks into the Russian invasion of Ukraine, let's turn now to the heavy human toll of the war. In just one city, Mariupol, Russian attacks have killed at least 5,000 people, more than 200 of them children. That's according to the mayor of Mariupol. Late last week, a bomb blast in Kramatorsk railway station killed dozens of people, most of them women and children trying to escape. We've also learned about civilian massacres in Bucha, Borodyanka, and most recently along the highway outside of Kyiv. Among the organizations trying to evacuate, treat, and care for the wounded is Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders. Avril Benoit is an emergency coordinator with the group and joins us now from a medical referral train in eastern Ukraine. Avril, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So we are hearing reports that describe this war as unusually brutal. I'm wondering if you can talk about the scope and severity of what you've seen, the impact on civilians.
It's quite frightening on just about every level. Over time, as we saw what happened in Mariupol, when a town becomes taken over by Russian forces and the impact of that, the inability of people to flee, it means that authorities now, in anticipation of attacks, of an invasion, of efforts to take over their region, are urging people to flee the eastern regions or oblasts of Luhansk, Donetsk, all around Kharkiv, and even now Dnipro, which has come under fire for the last several days. And so at the train stations, you have thousands of people that are just waiting patiently for the next opportunity to move westward, where it's considered considerably safer and where they could perhaps make the journey onward to other countries.
Right. Now, we mentioned that you're on a train in eastern Ukraine. Tell us where you are and what you're doing and who you're helping right now.
Yes, well, I'm aboard the medical referral train that we have been running now for just over a week. We've done four referrals from the east, and we don't talk about where we are exactly just for security reasons. And that's really out of respect for the hospitals that are referring their patients to us. They don't want to attract too much attention. But after we've left, we can then confirm the places we've been. For example, just before the attack on Kramatorsk, where the train station came under shelling, we had just been there for the last 2 days, evacuating patients that were referred to us from hospitals in that city. So the referral train that I'm on is actually now doing a pickup. We're going to have two stops. This is the first one. We'll be moving on to a next town, and only after we've cleared out of the zone would we be able to identify the location. But the goal here is to be able to relieve some of the pressure on these hospitals in the east. We're expecting things to get really bad. They're expecting mass casualty events with a lot of patients coming in as their areas come under fire, and to transfer the patients right across the country, this huge country. It's a 20 to 24 hour train ride to places, hospitals in Lviv, for example, which have quite a bit more capacity to look after the patients.
Well, I want to ask you about that capacity, because we are hearing from Ukrainian surgeons, for example, who say they've never seen these types of injuries. Does the country have the facilities and resources it needs to treat the kind of injuries that you're seeing?
The medical profession here is quite developed, but as anywhere that hasn't experienced war in their region, you know, shrapnel injuries, the kind of crush injuries, these catastrophic trauma cases, they don't have the experience. And so that's one area where our organization, Doctors Without Borders, has been able to bring our more experienced war surgeons to do some trainings. We've also done trainings in triage, which is a concept that most hospitals don't have experience in. You know, when you really have a lot of severely wounded people coming in all at once, and you have to make those impossible choices, but there's a way to do it, of who you can save, who can wait, and who you have to just determine they're too injured, they're not going to make it, no matter what you try to do under the circumstances with the resources and the number of operating rooms you might have on hand.
Right. We're hearing that helping these patients sometimes means splitting up families to get the individual members of the family the care that they need. Can you talk a little bit about that, some of the situations that you've encountered?
Well, it's a long way to go for people who have chosen to remain home, now are injured, and they're being given an opportunity at the urging of the hospital that's treating them to get to a safer place. We can't take whole families, although we have done so in some circumstances, and that does fill up the trains. But if you take, for example, the last train that we had 48 patients on board, plus family members. The family members are going to be the caregivers. They often want to stay at the bedside of their loved one. As I mentioned, the journey is extremely long, and what we can offer them on board is not a full intensive care unit level of care, but it's approximating that. We can keep them stable, we can watch their vitals, we can change bandages, and just get them to that other hospital that will look after them at the other end. But that's where things start to get really, you know, it's the great unknown. Where am I going? Who will look in on me? These are the kinds of choices that people have to make when they decide themselves, yes, I'm willing to go on this referral train because it's the best option for me now.
Sure. Avril, I assume that with Doctors Without Borders that you've been in other war zones over the years, and I'm just wondering how this experience compares to what you've seen elsewhere.
Well, a lot of the doctors that I'm working with here have experience of places like Syria, Iraq, or they worked in Democratic Republic of Congo or Yemen. One of the things that is really different here, I will say, you know, quite apart from the war wounded, the trauma that we're seeing, is that you have an older population here with chronic disease. And while the Ukrainian hospitals are really having to focus on the war wounded and the, you know, all the things that are related to the urgent cases that are coming in, we are concerned that there are others, elderly people who decided or couldn't flee, they decided to stay home or they couldn't flee, and they've been cut off from their medications or the ongoing medical care that they were getting before. And so this is a whole part of the war where you'll have knock-on effect. People will get really sick and possibly die just from not having access to their medication.
Right. I have to imagine as well that beyond the physical injuries that you're seeing, many of them life-threatening, you're also dealing with people who have experienced trauma, mental health trauma. And I'm wondering, is there immediate treatment available for people in this kind of crisis?
What we're trying to offer here in some of the trainings we're doing is something called psychological first aid. It's the kind of thing you can do as a kind of a one-shot where you know somebody is just passing through. They are experiencing a lot of stress, anxiety, depression, that fear of the unknown, but they have to keep moving because they've got children with them. They've got to get to where they're going. It's a very simple approach that just helps you focus on things that give you hope and keep you, you know, one step in front of the other. But, you know, talking about the effect, I was having a chat earlier with one of our doctors here on the train, a Ukrainian doctor from Sumy. And she said that she is now displaced. She's lost her home, her job that she had at a university, at a med school before. She is now having to try to keep her mind on the patients in front of her. And she says that that's what's helping her not think of the war, strangely enough. You know, even somebody who's war wounded, if she can just pour all of her energies, her attention, her concentration into being with that patient, doing the best she can on this medical referral train, it helps her overcome this sense, this profound sense of loss that she has.
Sure, sure. Avril, I know I have to let you go. And just one more question. Is there anything else you want to let our listening public know about what you're dealing with, what you're seeing there?
What breaks our hearts, I'll tell you, as a medical humanitarian organization that's been around for a long time, is that the people in this country that actually need the help the most are the ones that are inaccessible. If you are in a besieged area like Mariupol, and there are other cities like that, we are just not able to ensure that you have what you need and you can't flee. And that is just shattering. You know, that is just for all the effort, for all the might, all the, you know, know-how, commitment, can-do, resources, there are just some people that we're not able to reach.
Of course, that's heartbreaking. But Avril Benoit, she's with Médecins Sans Frontières, talking to us from a train in eastern Ukraine where she's helping move injured Ukrainians to get the medical help that they need. Avril Benoit, thank you for your time, and please stay safe.
Will do. Thank you.